Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome out to Botched Roll. I am your humble bard for this evening, Mike the Birdman Dodd from ThisWeekInGeek.net. And Botched Roll is a tabletop role-playing game show dedicated to you, the dungeon master, the storyteller, but also the players, and those of you that have a weird interest of it thereof. And what can you expect from this show? Well, you might get tales of adventure and daring do, but you also might get general discussions of topics of interest in the role-playing game world. You also may find interviews, like I had Sam Webb from Modiphius Entertainment on last week to talk about his experience being a Star Trek line developer. And that kind of got me thinking about today's topic. And today's topic for Botched Roll is going to be something very fundamental to role-playing, so I'm just going to kind of give you my rambling thoughts thereof on it. And what does that come down to? What does it mean to be a good player? And what does that mean? Well, your game master puts in a lot of work into each session, making sure the encounters are fun, the story is interesting and exciting, and that you and your friends are there to have a good time. But there's also ways you can reward the DM too, your dungeon master, your storyteller. From hence, I'm just going to call it the game master. And there's things that you can do as a player to make things a little bit better for them. So what does that mean? Okay, so when you set out to play a role-playing game, the first thing you do, obviously, is you create a character. And you create something that you want to play that's exciting or challenging, but ultimately it comes down to fun. What is fun for you will probably be fun for the DM. And what you want to do, first off, at least I've got a bunch of talking points, so I'm just going to kind of go through them as I read down my list. So I may jump around from place to place, but hopefully this will make some semblance of sense to you as we go over the course of the next little bit. So one of the things you could definitely do to make your GM very, very happy is fleshing out your background. And I know this is very much going to depend upon the type of game that you're playing, whether you're doing a simple dungeon crawl or doing something that's an expanded campaign, typically not for one shot, but depending on the type of game that you're playing, this is more suited for campaign style play, I'm going to say. But fleshing out your background means giving your background context. Why does your character do what they do? What events shaped him or her into what they're doing, so to speak? Like, one of my favorite role-playing game systems is a game called Shadowrun. And why does your character run the shadows? In fact, there's a great thing, which I think is in every edition of Shadowrun. I'm not 100% sure on that. But it's something called 20 questions. And the 20 questions are literally just that. 20 questions that help fill out your character's background. And whenever I run Shadowrun, short-term or long-term, I always have my players fill this out. Number one, it makes them think more than, well, I want to get money. I want new yen. I want cyberware. I want to be this kick-ass RoboCop assassin type person. And that's all fine and well if your character just wants to be a street samurai who kicks ass and chews bubblegum. But why? There has to be a reason. Why are you putting all this metal into your body? Why are you going out there to kick everyone's ass? Why are you doing... Basically, it boils down to why. Fleshing out your background, filling in the whys, makes you as a player more attached to it. You're more than just a collection of stats, numbers, and other stuff. You're more than just your gear. And that's what I want you to realize as a player to your dungeon master, to your storyteller. Be more than just a collection of stats and gear. Because when you do that, you're actually creating something akin to an actual character. You're creating a character you'd see on TV or in a movie or in a book. Like if you read about, say, I'm trying to think here, who's a good example of this? Hunger Games, Katniss Everdeen. You would look at her and say, okay, she wants to she's doing this to save her sister. That's why she volunteers as tribute. Stuff like that. But you realize she has a ridiculously high AC. Because she can dodge. She's very nimble. She's very good with a bow, obviously. Okay. So now you've taken your stats, you've now given them context. That's important too. Shadowrun. Your character is very, very, very charismatic. Well, that means you can interact with NPCs. Your dungeon master, your storytellers, your game masters, they want you to talk to their NPCs. They want to have creative conversations. They don't want to say, you walk into a room. It is 10 by 10. There is stuff on the walls. You find a box of gold coins in the middle of the room. Give them something interesting. Like, if you as the player character walk into a tavern, walk up to the barkeeper, walk up to a person on the street in the game, like, hoy, chummer, how's it going today? What do you think of this weather? Stuff like that. And it could be just a simple conversation like that. But the NPC might say, oh, man, I'm having a bad day. Man, did you hear what they're doing down in the Redmond Barrens? Those Halloweener frags are doing this, that, and the other thing. That's an opportunity for your dungeon master, storyteller, to give you adventure hooks. Because you have given your character a high charisma. You can do that. You can interact with people. Also, maybe even in your background. Maybe you put something... Let's go back to the Shadowrun example. Let's say your character doesn't like gangers. You don't like the Halloweeners. You don't like the Steppenwolves. And I know I'm using a lot of Shadowrun examples. It's one of the worlds I just happen to know the best. Okay, let's maybe switch it up to D&D. Maybe your character doesn't like gnomes or dwarves for some reason. Maybe a gnome stole his shoes. You put that in the background, is prejudice against gnomes. Maybe a gnome NPC shows up and asks for help. Is your character going to be a racist and say no? Or is your character actually going to listen when this gnomish woman is pleading to help for you to help find her son or something? It's things for adventure. Your game masters like that sort of shit. It makes it really, really interesting when you're willing to do stuff like that. And that kind of goes into my next thing, which is actually role-playing versus playing to win. When you're actually role-playing, let's assume you've made a background, your character's interesting, and let's make, once again, Shadowrun. You've made a character. Let's call him Tom Razor. Tom Razor, he is a street samurai, he comes from Seattle, he grew up in the Redmond Barrens. He is basically street scum, but he wants to do something better for his life. What's he going to do? Maybe he wants to join Lone Star. So now that gives your cops, or that gives your character something to aspire to be a police officer, to join one of the biggest mega corporations around. But still, it does make it interesting, right? So Tom Razor, as a believable character, has a reason. Why does he want to do this? Because he sees the crap that's going on in the Redmond Barrens. The cops don't come out there that often. They know things are bad. And that's something that you as a player can use some of a little bit of your world knowledge. Let's say you happen to know the world you're playing in. You can use that to your advantage. And as long as your DM doesn't approve or doesn't disapprove of you using that, which very few won't, I would say in my experience, if you're willing to go into the lore, as long as you're not saying, oh, I'm the 12th related cousin of Captain Kirk or some bullshit, he or she will probably let it slide because they want you to have this experience. They want you to have a character that you're connected to. So when you're actually role-playing, like I said, you're role-playing Tom Razor here, okay, he wants to do good. And that's another thing too. Playing a heroic character can be very rewarding. I don't like playing evil characters because I think it's just an excuse to run around and just murder people. Basically, you've just created murder the NPC, murder the game. And that's boring to me. That's stupid. That's playing Grand Theft Auto at a 5 wanted level. Sure, it's fine. It's fine and fun for 10 minutes, but you're eventually going to get bored of that shit quicker than you probably realize. So when you're actually role-playing there, you can create you. And what I mean is you can create isms for your character. Do you want to really get into it? Do you want to talk in a funny voice? You don't have to. You can if you want, if it doesn't annoy people around you. Also, It encourages other people around the table to maybe call you by your character's name. Instead of, hey, Mike, go shoot that guy. They might say, hey, Tom, blast that fragger. Stuff like that. Okay, now we're talking. For example, you'll notice when I was playing Cambridge Chronicles, I kept calling Alex Dargo and Tristan Farron and Lee Coro, trying to get them immersed in their characters. And Tristan definitely took to it. And once Alex was getting the hang of it, he's like, okay, I'm Dargo. I'm the bear fucker. I'm awesome. And he got into it. And there were moments like that where I presented them with opportunities to role play when we went to Cambridge and the Festival of the Sun. I'm like, all right, Dargo, tell us a tale of daring do and excite us. Tell the crowd how awesome you are. And he kind of froze for a second, but the opportunity was there. And sometimes you can't spring that on your players. Sometimes they're not totally comfortable with role playing yet. But the more you get them accustomed to the water, so to speak, the more they'll want to do it, because it can be so much fun, especially if they're in a world or a character that they're attached to. Stuff like that. Like, I know, for example, if this was World of Warcraft and I told, hey, Tristan, we're going to go fight the Horde today, he could tell me all these things about the Alliance and everything, and he could fill in the background for me, and he feels fulfilled as a player. And as a DM, okay, cool. Now you've given me something extra to work with because you're spouting off all this stuff. So, all right, neat. Now, when you're actually role-playing, you're not playing to win. And this kind of ties into my next topic. Playing to win versus min-maxing. And that will tie into yet another topic in just a second, too. So, playing to win. Being a player, don't think it's you versus the GM, because that can make things annoying. It can make things stupid, because you're basically antagonizing your GM to say, hey, I'm going to fuck with you the entire time. I've got your big bad's number. And once again, you become a collection of stats. It's not very rewarding when, let's say, trying to think of what's a good example. Okay, let's say Star Wars. Let's put the in the Star Wars. It's not very rewarding if Luke just kicks Darth Vader's ass the first time he sees him. For example, the first time Luke meets Vader in The Empire Strikes Back, they have a lightsaber duel. Luke gets his hand cut off. That's a dramatic moment. That is some great role playing. Luke's like, no, that's not possible. That's not true. Or Luke could have just threw a thermal detonator and killed Darth Vader with the blast. Yeah, he could have thrown it back at him, but the blast probably would have killed him. Or he could have had, you know, there's any number of different scenarios there where it could have made it more interesting. Or Luke force chokes friggin' Boba Fett and chokes him out, right? And it basically comes down, do you want to play a role-playing game or not? Do you want to have fun for an hour, or do you want to have fun for 10 minutes? And I'm not saying you shouldn't play to win if you're fighting a big bad, but don't go for the throat every time. It's like a steak or a good burger. Savor the taste for a few seconds. Have some fun with it. Explore it. Enjoy it. Hell, good role-playing. Hell, this will be controversial to say, I'm sure, to somebody. Good role-playing is like sex. You're there for a good time, not necessarily a long time, but enjoy it for as long as you possibly can. So I'm sorry we're not all porn stars. But my point is that I'm trying to make is, have fun. Stretch it out. Don't be a douchebag who just necessarily knows the rules inside and out and you can kill something in like a heartbeat, right? It's not fun. And I'm not saying drag every combat encounter out or drag every encounter out. Just don't be that guy. And that means min-maxing. And I always consider that guy to be the min-maxed asshole. And we saw this very early on in Cambridge with my friend AJ. And we started by playing D&D. He's used to playing 4d6, drop the lowest number. And I'm like, uh-uh. You're playing 3d6. He's like, but what if I don't get a good character? Well, then I guess that sucks for you, pal. I'm not going to make you play Derpy Hooves, but I'm also not going to let you play Conan every friggin' time. If I see 318s, man, why aren't you in Vegas? But at the same time, it's not fun, in my opinion, because if you're willing to balance a system or max your character out so they're basically invincible, what fun is that? And yes, going into a game optimized does make sense at times, and it can be fun, but I find you run into a lot of the same characters over and over again. And this is a big problem with D&D and Pathfinder, especially with like point buy systems. You see them, okay, well, I'm going to do this thing, and I just think that's the way it is. Basically, what is it? 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, something like that. I forget what the spread is for Pathfinder or D&D, but everybody has the same character. There's one stat that might be a dump stat, or they have nothing below a 10 or a 12, which is 0 to a plus 1. And cool, but I don't want every character to come out of there being this ridiculously, be more than a collection of stats. And min-maxing, like I said, makes you a jerk because you're looking at your character as not a creation of the mind. You're looking at it as a creation of math. In role-playing games, yes, there's a lot of math involved, but be more than a fucking Yahtzee. You know what I mean? Like, you kind of get what I'm saying here. Is be something more exciting than basically a stat sheet that looks like a Yahtzee spread. Don't be that. Be something interesting. If you happen to get really, really, really low numbers, okay, well, talk to your storyteller and say, well, I don't want to play this. Okay, definitely don't play the fighter who has an 8 constitution and like a 10 strength. Now, you could do that. You could be a very sickly fighter who just believes they can do anything, and that could be a really interesting time for role-playing, but you also have to balance that. Is my character going to survive the adventure? Once again, it's a juggling act. And that kind of brings me to my other point here, and that's balance optimized versus being interesting. Now, let's go back to the fighter there. Let's say you do have a really weak constitution. Okay, maybe your character is just really sickly. And you can work that into a background. Maybe your character had a disease. Maybe your character is just really frail. But the urge to adventure and the swing of sword is just, it's never left. Hell, okay, let's look at this from me. Me as Mike Dodd. I have a weak constitution. I'm missing my leg. That sucks. My constitution is likely quite low right now. I'm not able to fight off diseases as effectively as I once was. But my mind is still sharp. What does that mean? Spellcaster, wizard, stuff like that. There are so many possibilities for you. And it just means you have to adjust how you play, if that's what you want to do. Because ultimately, you want to. There has to be a balance between you being happy and the game master being happy. And obviously, you can't sacrifice one. Like, oh, well, I'm really happy, but the DM hates me. Or the DM's really happy with me, but I'm miserable. You got to strike a balance. And just have an open dialogue with your game master to figure out what you want to do. And I totally recommend doing that, because that kind of goes into my next thing, and that's opportunities for role-playing. Flaws. Okay, once again, let's use myself as an example. Okay, so my character is missing a leg. Okay, so he can't run. What game world am I in? In D&D, I'm likely not going out and adventuring, or at least if I am, I'm a pirate. I've got a peg leg or something. But let's put me in the Shadowrun. Okay. He's missing a leg and it can't be replaced by cybernetics for whatever reason. Let's just say that's a flaw that I took. And that's something else you should take. Flaws. Make your character interesting. And it can present some really neat opportunities. Okay. So my character's stuck in a wheelchair, but he wants to run the shadows. What can he do? I could be a computer god. I could be a Decker. Okay. That gives me definitely some options there because I rely on the Matrix. I rely on computer programs. I rely on a cyber deck to do all my work. Okay. Cool. All right. So I'm still viable as a character. Am I necessarily running into as technology with the rest of my group? No. But I'm now involved in the adventure. I'm just as viable as anybody else that's on the field. I'm just a little bit specialized. I can still go to the meets. I'm just not shooting up bad guys necessarily. But if I am, I'm going to have a sweet-ass wheelchair, and that's how I'm getting out. Or maybe if the characters have to bring me on to a run where I have to crack ice, which is intrusion countermeasures electronics, maybe they have to bring me on site. How do you hide a wheelchair guy? Because that's going to stick out in the future. That makes the adventure that much more interesting now, doesn't it? Now you got to plan for that shit. And that makes it cool. That makes it exciting. Other flaws you can bring out is, let's go back to that high charisma we talked about a while ago. Okay, your character's got a really, really, really high charisma. But maybe his mom and dad don't get along with him so well. So despite that he can charm the pants off of anybody, he can wheel and deal, or they can do whatever they want, maybe there's just a family breakdown. And no matter how charming they are, they just can't get past mom and dad for whatever reason, or brother or sister or whoever. So look for relationships that you can necessarily fracture. Maybe somebody wants you dead. Maybe it's a case of mistaken identity. There could be any number of reasons why someone wants your head. For my Decker guy, let's say me, maybe somebody wants me dead because I went into their data network and I screwed it up. Cost them their job, cost them their livelihood, or maybe I got somebody killed. And that gives the DM something to play with later on, saying, oh man, Mike really screwed up someone's life. But how? And you two can work together to create a really cool-ass backstory for your character. And it may be something that doesn't come up for an adventure, or one, or two, or five. But it does give you something, because eventually someone's going to kick down the door to the Coffin Motel and realize, hey, are you the Birdman? Yeah, you killed my sister. What? And the rest of the players will be like, whoa, what did you do? We've been with you the whole time. And maybe that's something your character didn't share with anybody else because they're ashamed. Now, you might hear Dr. Wily crying in the background because he's, well, being a cat. Stuff like that. And now I just mentioned there your group. Be willing to talk to the other players. Make sure your characters know as much as they want to in each other's worlds. What do I mean by that? Is, okay, my character has a dark secret. Am I necessarily going to share it with my role-playing buddy Tim? Not necessarily, but you could. Basically, your character should have a reason for adventuring the other beyond money, usually. In Shadowrun, that's a little less of a thing because Mr. Johnson recruits whoever he wants to, but typically have a reason for your characters to be together. Maybe your buddies, maybe your friends, maybe your acquaintances, or there's any number of reasons for you guys to come together. But being a good player to your DM, and this is kind of what I wanted to swing back around to, is, let's say you've created this awesome character. You know your character. You know their tragic backstory, or non-tragic, their heroic backstory. But this is the first time you've played. And you are at a table full of veteran players. do not be afraid to ask for help. For example, on Terrible Warriors, we're going to welcome a couple of new people to the show this year, and their role-playing experience is limited to none. And I've said to them, don't be afraid to ask for help. As long as you're willing to be there with us, we're going to help you out because we want you to have a good time. And that's why you roleplay. You roleplay to have fun. And I think a lot of people lose sight of that. Like, oh, we're playing to win. We want to conquer this scenario. I want to conquer Mr. Make-Believe. No, we're there to tell a collaborative story while having fun. And we want you to have fun with us. And if that means we got to pause every so often to explain to you, well, how do I hit the guy? You look at your, I'll use Shadowrun as an example, second edition rules. So if I get this wrong, I'm really sorry. Look at your skill, firearms 5, means you have 5 six-sided dice. You have to hit target number 4. So on those 5 dice, you want to get as many of those above 4 as possible. If you get a 1, it takes away one of your successes. Which is, if you, let's say those 5 dice, you get 5 dice, you get 5 successes. You have pinged this guy right in the head. He's dead, no matter what, pretty much. At least that's how I run my games. So sue me. But if you get a 1, let's say 4 of those dice were 4s. 1 of those dice was a 1. So you lose that success. And let's say your player doesn't necessarily get that. You just explain that to them. Be patient. And don't be like, oh, fuck, did you read the rules or not? No, don't be an asshole. Because you want to be good to your DM. And that may mean a little bit of help on your behalf. I'm not saying you have to memorize the rule books, but be familiar, but don't be afraid to ask for help either, because we're all there for a good time. We want to have a great time. If you're asking questions every 5 minutes, there may be something you don't get and somebody else at the table does, or maybe the DM can explain it to you, or the action can just take a break for 5 minutes. Everybody sit up, grab a snack, go to the bathroom, explain this to me. And don't be afraid of that, too. Because I think that's really important in a role-playing game, is that everybody at the table is cooperating with you. And that kind of goes to my next point, and that's encouraging teamwork versus hogging the spotlight. There's almost always going to be somebody at your table who is talking the most, or is doing the most in combat, or is basically hogging the spotlight. And that's okay now and again, because maybe some players aren't totally comfortable doing that just yet. And that's not a bad thing. You can grow up to that, or you can find a way for everybody to equally share the spotlight. Going to Cambridge Chronicles, Lee was very much in the background. Yet, when I gave him a chance to shine, because he created a very social character, he did rather well. Early on, he's like, hey, do you want to play dice? What's a good example? When he was playing with the Thieves Guild Master Corrin, he was talking quick, talking fast, whereas Alex and Tristan weren't necessarily that comfortable with role-playing yet. And it got better as time went on. That they all learn to cooperate amongst each other. Like, okay, who's going to lead this fight? Who's going to lead this social encounter? And it worked out okay once everybody kind of knew what everybody's vibe was. And that just comes from feeling out the table. And don't hog the spotlight if you can help it. I mean, but then again, someone may have to push the story forward. The DM can do so much. But as a player, too, you can encourage your fellow players. Be like, hey, Alex, your character is really good at knowing the streets. Maybe you should find out what's going on out there. Or, hey, Tristan, your character's really knowledgeable about nature. What do you know? And stuff like that. Ask around. Make sure everybody around the table feels included. Because that's a big thing here. You want everybody to have participation in this story so that it's interesting, so that it's fun for everybody. And even the new person, include them as much as you possibly can within their comfort zone, right? And that could be something too, as you play as a player to the game master. If there's any topics you don't want your storyteller to bring up, talk to them beforehand. I know there's this thing going on at conventions right now where you can hold up a card that has an X, and it basically means whatever topic is being talked about or scenario or whatever. You just have to tap this card, no explanation needed. The game master understands, okay, moving off this topic, for example. And maybe that's something, if your player is not comfortable, they could tap something and be like, okay, all right, what's up? What can we do? And eventually they'll get more and more comfortable as time goes on, as you start to include them. There is no I in team. And these role-playing games are very much team-building exercises, because as awesome as your character may be as John McClane or whatever, like the character from Die Hard, he needed help from Al. Al Powell being Carl Winslow from Family Matters, helping him out over the radio, giving him intelligence. They were a team working together. John could only do so much. So be sure, be the Al Powell to another character. Help them out. They will help you out. And in turn, that makes everybody at the table happy. And that kind of brings me to my final point, and that is knowing the room, so to speak. AKA, don't be that guy. And that comes talking with your players, talking with your game master. What kind of game are you playing? You should probably do this almost immediately. Are you playing a serious game? Is this a one-shot? Is this a campaign? Is this a comedy game, so to speak? For example, I can't fucking stand comedy games. I think they're stupid. I think they're irreverent. But they have their place. For example, people love Paranoia. I could go the rest of my life without playing another session of Paranoia, and I would die a happy man. But some people dig that. Some people dig the slapstick comedy and like, ho, 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 you just got hit by a giant piano, you're dead. That's not fun to me. And maybe that's not fun to you either. So talking with your game master can say, okay, we're going to play Star Wars, and I want it to be a little serious. Okay, I can do that. So maybe you'll have a little less of R2-D2 pissing on people, and you'll have a little more Anakin slaughtering younglings. Bad example, but you get my point. And you'll find out, if you're be very open with your communication with your groups, you'll get a very rewarding experience out of it, because when everybody's on the same page with you, you've built camaraderie, and you've done that without rolling a single dice. That is something special. That is something when your group will truly come together. Be like, okay, we know what we're playing. We know each other. We've got this new person. Help us help you. And everybody, I'm not saying it's going to be all kumbaya right from the get-go, because that's not entirely realistic, but you're on a better start point than most groups are. You're not just jumping in. And I'll talk a little bit more about finding a group later on, basically determining group dynamics, so to speak. And you'll find your space within the group pretty quickly. And being a good player, too, is, like I said, open communication with everybody. And just seeing what can happen. Yeah, there's the possibility for group dynamics to kind of punch you in the face. More often than not, it won't. And you'll be pretty happy with the way things are going. But group dynamics, that's a topic for another day, so to speak. How do you handle problem players? How do you handle problems in your group? And if I had that answer, well, I'd be writing self-help books. All I can say is what I want you to take away from this episode of Bots Droll, is be more than a collection of stats. Be more than math. Just because your character is not action movie hero doesn't mean they can't be heroic. Sometimes tragedy promotes heroics, and sometimes heroics promote tragedy. And don't be afraid to ask for help, because ultimately, the more help I give you, the more enjoyment you'll get out of something. And that's what makes things enjoyable. When we're all working together to create something fantastic and wonderful, we all have a wicked time telling a story together. So that's going to do it for this edition of Botched Roll. I have been your storyteller, Mike the Birdman Dodd from thisweekingeek.net, and hopefully you've enjoyed these. Once again, please email me, mike@thisweekingeek.net. I always want to hear from you to talk about topics. You can also reach me on Twitter @BirdmanDodd or Instagram. You can find me there under the same name, or comment on this episode post. So anyway, guys, until next time, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying live free or die hard, and may all your roles be natural 20s.
Well, kids, that's enough for one night, eh?
You know, I don't think this show is suitable for children.
I don't think this show is suitable for anybody.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear something like this.
Insert a clip here, you dick.
Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net for more geek content. And subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Follow and message us on Twitter at @ThisWeekInGeek. And check out our Instagram at @twig_official_podcast. If you're the good old-fashioned email type, send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
We now join America's most popular show already in progress. Everybody loves Hypnotoad.